Welcome to Lakeshore Update. I'm Dee Dotson. On this edition of the podcast, you'll hear the latest on Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. speaking at a forum on race and law enforcement earlier this week. Brandon Smith reports on the concerns over the latest COVID data, and Chris Nolte has a conversation with Dawn Michaels, Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity. All of that and more on this edition of Lakeshore Update. Indiana law enforcement leaders defended their profession and the justice system at a forum on race and law enforcement held in Indianapolis Tuesday. The forum was organized by several community organizations, including the Indiana Drug Enforcement Association and the Indianapolis Recorder. It featured a panel of Hoosier law enforcement leaders, including Lake County Sheriff Oscar Martinez Jr. He says connecting with the community is key.
Not going to the community when it's election time, that's not going to work. They're not going to buy that. It's being there all the time.
Indiana Fraternal Order of Police President Bill Owensby says false narratives about police created by celebrities and social activists are at the heart of the problem. He insists the most important thing people can do in police encounters is simply comply.
There's this misnomer that the police profession is broken. It isn't. It's a very proud profession, and we take pride in how we protect the citizens of our communities.
The panel did not feature anyone from community-based organizations. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. State Health Commissioner Dr. Chris Box says Indiana's latest COVID-19 numbers are concerning. But the governor's ongoing position is that it's the responsibility of all 6.7 million Hoosiers to help mitigate the virus's spread.
Work individually with those particular counties or districts to make sure that we address with them those options available to them.
Governor Eric Holcomb did not take questions from the press during Wednesday's COVID-19 update like he has done for the last 7 months. But earlier in the day, at an unrelated event, Holcomb said the state is in a, quote, much different place than at the start of the pandemic. And he emphasized the need for people to be responsible.
Not just the government or an individual business. That means every 6.7 million Hoosiers that are all part of this and contribute to positivity rates, et cetera.
Dr. Box says people need to continue to socially distance and wear masks while out in public. You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. A small business advocacy group says Indiana entrepreneurs are frustrated by President Trump's decision to wait until after the election to pass another federal stimulus package. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports, the delay puts small businesses further on edge with no relief coming anytime soon.
The proposed stimulus package included financial aid to small businesses and those unemployed due to the pandemic. A survey conducted by the National Federation of Independent Business forecasts that 1 in 5 Hoosier small businesses will close over the next 6 months if economic conditions do not improve. Indiana State Director Barbara Quant says it's disappointing when both parties have pointed to the importance of helping small businesses.
As these months drag on and small business owners are doing what they can, it is frustrating to see that while there's agreement on small business, we can't get a package that helps them going through Congress.
Quant says she hopes everyone will come back to the table soon to work out an agreement on the additional relief before more small businesses have to close. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Samantha Horton.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. Indianapolis-based Eli Lilly has requested emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration for its COVID-19 antibody treatment. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Barbara Angiano reports the company is now looking ahead to what distribution of the drug will look like.
Lilly's request for this antibody drug comes after the company's second round of drug trials showed a lower hospitalization rate for those who had been treated after testing positive for COVID. These patients also showed lower levels of the COVID-19 virus in their systems after the treatment. The company says it plans to produce about 100,000 doses of the drug in October. When it comes to cost, Lilly Chairman and CEO Dave Ricks says the company is working on a plan with other governments and agencies.
The one overriding principle that we've decided on is that whatever we end up charging, it should create value for society beyond Lilly.
If approved by the FDA, Lilly plans to produce 1 million doses by the end of 2020. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Barbara Angiano.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson. The hope of Hoosiers who wanted Indiana to expand vote by mail for this fall's election are all but buried after a federal appeals court ruling Tuesday. A group of Indiana residents sued the state, trying to force it to allow any registered voter to cast a mail-in ballot for the 2020 general election. The state expanded vote by mail in the primary, but Republicans refused to do so for the fall. A federal district court judge already denied that request last month, and now the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals has done the same. In a unanimous decision, the appellate court said it's the pandemic, not the state, that's to blame if voters choose not to cast a ballot this year because of fears around COVID-19. The court's decision said Indiana has no constitutional duty to expand vote by mail. The appeals court judges also balked at changing Indiana's system so close to the election. It's likely only the Supreme Court could now force Indiana to expand vote by mail for this year's election, and such a move is unlikely.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
More than half of the voting machines Hoosiers are using in this year's election don't have a paper backup, making them more vulnerable to irreversible errors and breaches. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith reports Republicans have repeatedly refused to provide counties funding to upgrade their machines.
An IU Public Policy Institute analysis says 57% of Indiana voting machines don't have a verified paper trail. Policy analyst Joe T. Martin says the trail helps both voters and election administrators determine whether votes were recorded correctly.
If the machine was tampered with, there's no way for us to even know that that's happened.
It doesn't even have to be malicious. A software glitch would likely also be undetectable. The General Assembly last year mandated all electronic voting machines be outfitted with paper backups, but Martin says that law doesn't require it until 2030.
Which, for the next 10 years, kind of leaves our elections vulnerable.
Democrats have pushed Republican leaders to prioritize funding for the necessary upgrades that 52 of 92 counties still don't have. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Brandon Smith at the State House.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Sexually transmitted infections, or STIs, have been on the rise for years. But the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted public health efforts to address the issue. As Side Effects Public Media's Natalie Krebs reports, this has some worried about a surge in cases.
The primary healthcare clinic in Des Moines, Iowa, offers a safe haven for people with sexually transmitted infections. In a nondescript testing room, there's a basket filled with condoms and pamphlets. This is prevention specialist Noah Beacom.
And yeah, we just tell everybody it's confidential, judgment-free. We want to make sure everybody's as comfortable as possible.
Last year, the clinic performed nearly 4,000 tests for STIs like chlamydia, gonorrhea, and HIV. But Prevention Services Manager John Shaw says this year looks much different.
we're down to about a quarter of the amount of tests that we would normally be doing on like a month per month basis.
Blame COVID-19. Due to new screening and cleaning procedures, the clinic has limited the number of appointments, and Beacom says they've drastically cut back on community outreach events, which account for about a quarter of their tests.
Like Pride, like Iowa Leather Weekend, or before we went to colleges a lot more and stuff like that.
The clinic is hardly alone. Under COVID-19, many public health organizations had to suspend or cut back vital STI services like outreach programs. Stefan Burrell is an epidemiologist with Johns Hopkins University.
A lot of what we do for STI prevention is trying to get out to the venues, trying to get out to the community. And obviously, all that ended very, very quickly.
Burrell says a survey he conducted in April found gay men reported having a much tougher time getting access to STI testing, especially those in the 15 to 24 age group.
So these are folks that know they're symptomatic and know that they have an STI and just can't access the sort of confirmatory tests or the treatment.
That's at a time when STI rates have been skyrocketing nationally. From 2014 to 2018, the rates of gonorrhea went up 63%, while syphilis increased 71%. George Walton of Iowa's Public Health Department can already see how the pandemic may be distorting this year's numbers. The rate of chlamydia appears to be down, but he says that might be misleading.
I have a strong suspicion that it's not just a true decrease in transmission. I suspect that there's just more asymptomatic people who aren't getting tested and getting diagnosed.
Walton says the pandemic also has caused shortages of STI testing supplies, medication, and public health workers. That's forced public health organizations to provide services in new ways. Erin Davison Rippey is the executive director for Planned Parenthood in Iowa. She says they've started using telehealth. It's allowed them to expand testing and treatment options.
So that allows patients from across the state to easily access care that might not otherwise be available where they live.
The primary healthcare clinic is adapting too. Beacom says they've started offering an at-home HIV test.
So we advertised on some of the gay, bi dating apps, and a lot of the folks that we're getting responses from live in like rural areas.
Burrell, the Johns Hopkins epidemiologist, says these pandemic-inspired shifts are important to better reach the community.
In the context of COVID, it's taught us that we have to do better with thinking about how to serve people, via the internet, via the places where they're engaging.
And Burrell says these new approaches can better reach rural and suburban populations, where STI rates are growing the fastest. For Side Effects Public Media, I'm Natalie Krebs.
You're listening to Lakeshore Update with Dee Dotson.
Here's regionally speaking host Chris Nolte with a conversation with Habitat for Humanity Executive Director Dawn Michaels.
It's time for another house to go up with Habitat for Humanity of Northwest Indiana, and the next one to go up is going to be in Gary, Indiana. And to find out more about this project, because it's a partnership, we have Dawn Michaels. She's the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity for Northwest Indiana, and she's with us from her office. And Dawn, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you having us on, or me on, and talking about Habitat for Humanity of Northwest Indiana.
Well, it's always exciting to talk about Habitat for Humanity and the houses that they build in the region. There have been so many people over the recent years that have benefited from having a place to stay. They've gotten out of an apartment or they've gotten out of a substandard home. They've been able to bring their family together in something that's nice and new. And even though they may have had to put in some sweat equity to get the thing built, they still always seem to be appreciative of the fact that they have someplace nice to live, someplace they can really and truly call home. And I'm sure that the next family who's going to take advantage of this, Shakira Best and her family, are certainly looking forward to be able to get into this new place. Tell us, if you will, first about the partnership that Habitat for Humanity has set up here with Spectacle Entertainment, which, of course, runs the Majestic Star Casino.
So we reached out to Spectacle Entertainment. One of our board members works there, and we do wall panel builds as fundraisers to help raise the money to build the homes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did is they actually paid for all of the materials for the walls for the wall panel build and built the walls on their location for the house, mm-hmm. the interior and exterior.
Now, are these just basically they're rough walls, I assume, and they of course will go up on the site and they just kind of built them indoors or at least in some open space so they could spread things out and put all the materials together to nail them all to BART?
Yep. So this is actually one of our fundraisers. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we need a large parking lot, and the parking lot, of course, is cordoned off, and we have all the wood that has been pre-cut for, the closets and the entryways and the headers for the windows and everything else. And basically, it's a big puzzle, and you put the pieces together, and everybody nails it. All the walls, there's a diagram, and you follow the diagram, and we load up the walls and deliver them to the site for the house. And then the next weekend normally is the raising of the walls.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that this goes into a neighborhood that is this is not the first house to go up in this particular neighborhood as a Habitat for Humanity project. This is a project that has going along with many others that have put up in the area. Tell us about this Field of Dreams neighborhood. How did it get started, and what are the houses out there now?
So the Field of Dreams started over 10 years ago. It is the blocks of 17th and Adams and 18th and Adams. We are finishing up our two last houses on 18th and Adams, and we will be building on the next block over. So we will be building again at 17th and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
So very, very exciting that we are continuing to expand our Field of Dreams. And it's a great community. There's a new fire station over there. There's a park. Very, very neighborly.
I understand that that whole neighborhood, that particular area, I should say, that we just described, is primarily nothing but Habitat for Humanity homes. Have there been any other houses that have been put out there, or did you all have an opportunity to take over a big expanse of land that was cleared away for the neighborhood?
So the City of Gary actually is a wonderful partner of ours, and the City of Gary actually donated these parcels of land, the entire block, all but one. Are all Habitat houses. So when you drive down both blocks, all of them are Habitat homes except for one. And that one is a brick home that has been there for many, many years. So we have revitalized it, and that homeowner is now living back in a community, which is great.
That's great. Tell us a little bit about Shakira Best and her family. What was their interest in wanting to be able to be involved in a Habitat for Humanity project?
I think the for all of our families, I think it's so important that they're purchasing a house. It's not a giveaway. They're purchasing a house at a zero interest mortgage. So for that they have to have a need, and they have to put in 300 sweat equity hours on whether it's their home or someone else's. And I know that you had mentioned that earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so again, they have to be willing to partner with Habitat and, be willing to put a little bit of sweat equity in there and, learn some new skills.
Now, besides the fact that you have a board member who happens to be a part of the Majestic Star Casino staff and has been involved as an executive, actually, of Spectacle Entertainment here in Northwest Indiana, what other involvement have you had with the Majestic Star Casino? Is this their first venture, or have they been involved in other similar projects in the past?
So Majestic Star Casino and Hotel, Spectacle Entertainment has mm-hmm. been very gracious and has made several donations also. To our restores for some of the hotel furniture that they have. That the hotel, of course, is now closed, and they will be building a new one. So they have been able to donate some of the items in there as well in the past, which is absolutely great because our restores also help fund a house, a Habitat home.
Mm-hmm. Now, since you mentioned that the interior and exterior walls have all been framed up and then they're going to be going up on site very soon out there in the neighborhood in Gary, what is the next step? Would they just be kind of closed in, a roof put on? What's the next step once the walls are actually up on site?
So our main focus for 1828 will be to get it in the dry, dried in.
Mm-hmm.
So we will raise the walls, set trusses, get doors and windows and the roof on, all basically get it in the dry so we can work on the interior throughout the winter.
It's a very, very involved project, I understand, and certainly, as you say, besides the fact that the whoever is going to be taking over the house and the mortgage for that house being their own house, they have to put, of course, their own time and effort into this as well. Are there any other volunteer groups? And I know during the pandemic, it's probably messed everything up. We'd have a whole crew of volunteers helping out at times. Are you still able to be able to do that, only have to modify it a bit because of social distancing? Distancing at all?
We have. So, of course, at both of our restores and on our construction site, we are practicing social distancing when we can. We have masks available. We have gloves available. We are wiping down the tools on a daily basis. If they have their own protective eyewear, they can bring their own protective eyewear and their own gloves, or that is provided and that is sanitized as well. So we're trying our best to follow all of the guidelines that the CDC is recommending, mm-hmm. in order to stop the spread of COVID.
Now, we have this one house that is going up in another part of Adams in Gary as part of the Field of Dreams neighborhood that's set up out there. Are there any other homes either in that neighborhood or other neighborhoods here in Northwest Indiana that is on the list for work that Habitat for Humanity is planning in the future?
So currently we have two homes that we will be, hopefully, in the near future, we will be closing on, and both of those homes, 315 Walter and right across the street, 340 Walter in Merrillville. We have a house that is being worked on right now in Lake Station in the beautiful subdivision of Riverwalk. And then we also will start a house in Lowell for a partner family as well. So that will be our fourth or fifth property in Lowell. Which is really exciting.
They're going up so fast; it's maybe hard to keep track of them. You put them up on the list like the home builders have to do. It's kind of an ongoing project list as to what's in the status of each particular project, because they're all in various states of construction, aren't they? Or have maybe, as you mentioned, some of the properties have yet to go to closing, perhaps, and getting ready to be built sometime.
Yeah. So it's a very unique model because, of course, we aren't building, we're building throughout Lake County, Indiana, which, is wonderful, but there are some challenges because you have to take all the tools over to the one property and then the tools go to a different property, the next day, and they are all at different levels of construction. So we have siding on in Lake Station and we'll, set the trusses and get that, get the roof framed in and everything. Whereas 340 Walter, we're installing flooring and putting in the cabinets for the kitchen. That one should be done hopefully by the end of November, which is really exciting.
I know that besides the efforts to put up permanent affordable housing here in Northwest Indiana for those families that qualify, you have to rely on the general public to help cover some of the costs for everything that is done by Habitat for Humanity. Will you spend a moment and talk a little bit about the two restores, the first one that was built on Ridge Road in Gary and then the latest one in Merrillville?
Sure. So our restores help, as I mentioned earlier, our restores help fund Habitat houses. Each one is technically you want your habitat restore to be able to fund one home per year. So people can donate their gently used appliances and furniture. If you're going to get out you're going to Best Buy or wherever to get stainless steel, we'll take those almond refrigerators or the white refrigerators. We're always looking for appliances. We're mm-hmm. always looking for furniture, and when we sell those items, that in turn, the profit goes to build a Habitat home for a struggling working family.
Well, I know I've donated a gas range over time to a Habitat for Humanity that went into somebody's house, and it's just a case where you have it, you donate it, and the benefits are going to come back to you certainly multiple.
Absolutely. If a family, if their stove goes out or their oven goes out and they can't afford to go to an appliance store and spend $400 or $800 on a brand new appliance, we do check all of the appliances and test them to make sure that they are you know, in working order.
Mm-hmm.
And at a fraction of the cost, we can actually get them a brand new stove or oven that is gently used, but is still fully functional.
Now, getting back to Shakira Best, her family, and the house that is going up now with the help of the crew from the Majestic Star Casino, any timetable that you hope they can be able to move in sometime early next year, I assume?
Yeah, for Kyra and her family, we're hoping to have that house completed by March.
That's great to hear. Dawn Michaels is the Executive Director of Habitat for Humanity in Northwest Indiana, talking about the latest house that is going up with the help of Majestic Star Casino, going up in the neighborhood of Habitat Houses in Gary called the Field of Dreams.
Regionally Speaking with host Chris Nolte can be heard each Monday through Thursday at noon on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and streaming online at lakeshorepublicradio.org, where you can also find podcasts of the show when you click on the program link. For the latest in local news and information, tune in Monday at 6 a.m. for Morning Edition with local host Chris Nolte. Lakeshore Update is supported by the listeners and members of Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Podcasts for Lakeshore Update are posted each Friday on our website, lakeshorepublicradio.org, as well as on NPR One. Make sure you search for WLPR and select us as your home station. Music for Lakeshore Update was written and produced by BenSound.com. For Lakeshore Update, I'm Dee Dotson.